Welcome to the Satellite World Briefing Podcast. I'm your host, Lucas Hunsaker. This is part two of my conversation with Valor Consultancy, where we continue our discussion on the evolution of in-flight connectivity, particularly how early adopters of technologies like 2KU are well-positioned to capitalize on the next generation of IFC solutions, including multi-orbit and low-Earth orbit systems. Discuss how airlines are leveraging IFC to exceed passenger expectations with an emphasis on operational applications, and then we'll shift our conversation towards business aviation and dive into how the IFC landscape is a little more fragmented due to varying aircraft sizes, missions, and budgets, and solutions range from high-end multi-orbit setups to basic L-band systems with no one-size-fits-all model. And finally, we'll discuss the adoption challenges, including cost, hardware lock-in, and regional regulatory differences, especially with newer technologies like LEO. If you haven't already, be sure to listen to part one of our conversation. And without further ado, here is part two. Now, for companies that were early adopters of technologies like 2KU, how do you see them positioned to capitalize on the newer, more advanced IFC technologies available today?
Yeah, this is a good question. I think it comes down to just that maturity, at least in my view. These carriers have obviously had in-flight connectivity for a number of years now, and so they've been able to sort of shape what they want in terms of performance, what they want that service to look like from a performance point of view, knowing what passengers are expecting to do on board. Yeah, they know what they want in terms of passenger experience, including like from an operational standpoint, how they want the crew to be able to interact with passengers, particularly those that are important frequent flyers. I think they've also been through the business case and building that business case, which is a significant effort. A significant challenge, I think, being able to justify the commercials. They've got a lot of evidence to sort of back up some of the assumptions that need to be made as part of that process. And they're also familiar with the CapEx and the OpEx that coincides with this type of service. From an engineering point of view, they're understanding, better than ever around the package, the design, the hardware, the benefits, the pros and cons of various different hardware. And again, the complexity of getting those solutions on the aircraft and the benefits of a retrofit versus line fit and when those installations can take place. And then finally, just the complexity of getting it all right, which again is a substantial effort. So I think when I think through that question, it's just that level of maturity that comes with making those mistakes, I guess, first time round, learning, and then just being better prepared for it as we enter this second and third generation of technology and going into that. They just know what they want.
Craig, do you have any follow up for that?
Yeah, I guess I'm thinking back to some of the early adopters. Airlines like Delta, I think, probably were ahead of the curve when they adopted 2KU, which, I think it really revolutionized the market by offering a low-profile antenna that reduced drag and outperformed some of the older, fully gimbaled systems, providing better connectivity at a lower cost. So really, those early adopters are probably well-positioned to take advantage of, multi-orbit and probably going to be some of the first to go down that route. Delta just announced that they're putting a LEO ESA next to the ThinCom antenna, Ka band version that's similar to the one used in 2KU, under the same radome on some of their aircraft. And, I think that's interesting. And our view at Valor is that multi-orbit solutions are unlikely to be as widespread in business aviation as they will be in commercial aero, mainly due to the space constraints that exist on smaller business jets. But they probably will be more popular in that VIP and head of state subsegment, thinking about it, where there's a growing requirement for multiple redundant paths off the aircraft. You see that in the military space, which shares a lot of similarities with the head of state segment, where they have these PACE configurations, they're called, I think, primary, alternate, and contingency and emergency paths off the aircraft. So, yeah, I think a lot of those early adopters of 2KU are probably going to go down the multi-orbit route. And as I say, multi-orbit is probably something that we're likely to see more so in the head of state subsegment of business aviation, that VIP specific part of the market.
So I know we touched on this earlier about how
in-flight Wi-Fi is becoming almost a baseline expectation for customers. But let's dig into how airlines can exceed customer expectations when it comes to offering in-flight connectivity.
Yeah, so that's a good question. I mean, just coming back to the way in which like airlines are, I guess just taking a step back, the way that airlines are competing using in-flight connectivity, we've done some really interesting analysis on our side using our like quarterly tracker and combining that with schedule data. And you can really see that airlines have been very, very keen to, I guess, impress customers on those really strategic routes, those city pairs where there's a lot of competition, where there's a lot of value to be had. And airlines on those particular routes are definitely deploying what I would label premium products, and in-flight connectivity sits way within that premium proposition of, you know, things like elite aircraft, elite seats, in-flight entertainment screens, often seat back, in-seat power. You know, in-flight connectivity sits well and truly in that in-cabin product. And a lot of the airlines that operate in those strategic routes, for them, they're deploying, you know, their free service, their fastest service on those routes. And so there's definitely that element of, look, we want to exceed expectation by putting, you know, the best product in these strategically important the strategically important routes. And so I think when it comes to that expectation and exceeding that expectation, it goes back to an answer that I made earlier, which is around just offering a service that's consistent, ideally that's well priced, if not free, and offers that wow factor when it comes to what the passenger's expecting to do and getting close to meeting that. So I think that's really where we are with that.
You know, there's probably also an element of using connectivity to surprise and delight passengers, I'd say, too. You know, the little things, the little touches can go a long way. And I think back to a white paper that we put together a little while ago that really focused on these things. And, you know, these things are pretty easy to implement, I think. But, you know, you can obviously use connectivity to alert the passenger to when a connecting flight has changed and, you know, just make their journey that little less stressful than it already is. You can obviously use it to make them aware that their bag has made it safely on board the aircraft and that it's actually traveling with them. And even, you know, with some of the setups today where you move out of coverage in the polar routes, you can just send a little message to the passenger, put it on the IFE screen to say, look, we're about to move out of coverage. Might be a good idea to save you work. You know, those little touches can go a long way. So it doesn't necessarily have to be about, yeah, you know, we can stream 4K Netflix, we can do this, that, and the other. There's a lot of little things that can be done with connectivity if a carrier thinks carefully about it that can make a big difference.
Yes, it's a good point because it often goes as a bit of an unsung hero. And we've done reports on this in the past around the operational applications of connectivity, and adoption's really quite low because I think a lot of the focus goes on the passenger, like SSID and the passenger experience, which is obviously the correct way to look at it. But a lot of the full service carriers, we call them the royals in our way of segmenting the airline world. You know, these carriers deploy, you know, tablets with their staff that allow them to go to, you know, to frequent flyers and welcome them on board, make sure that they're comfortable, even those that are sat, you know, in economy. This isn't just like a business class offering. And it's like, to Craig's point, it's a nice little touch. Things like notifications on baggage, but again, also it might be something that you link to the CRM system or the ground infrastructure to understand what a passenger might have ordered prior to the flight. And I think my words of advice is that isn't just an offer that should be restricted to those, I guess, those full service carriers. It's something that all airlines should be looking to do. And I think over time, we'll start to see that maturity move away from the passenger pipe into those operational applications and making some of those real time as opposed to where they are today, which is almost like a store and forward type approach.
Now, with next-gen ATG and ESAs competing to be the preferred connectivity solution, how do you see the in-flight connectivity landscape evolving?
Okay, it's a good question. When I look at business aviation, there's no one-size-fits-all solution and never will be, you know. When you think about the fleet's diversity, as I mentioned before, there's a bunch of different airframes, lots of different mission profiles, different operator models, and, you know, aircraft of all ages, some really, really old aircraft out there too. I guess you'll have operators at the top end of the spectrum willing to spend big on resilience and go down the multi-orbit, multi-band, multi-technology route that I talked about earlier. And then you'll have individual owner operators who won't need those multi-orbit setups and probably don't have space for them on their aircraft either. Yeah, thinking about it, when it comes to age, it's important to remember, at least in this market, that retrofits don't really happen that often on aircraft that are older than 10 years. There's loads of older jets out there that will probably stay unconnected or stick with existing systems as long as they stay supported by the service provider. You know, I've talked about things to death already, I guess, from a regional standpoint with air to ground in North America. You know, air to ground doesn't really exist anywhere else in business aviation. And when you look at things through the LEO lens, there are a bunch of countries still that have yet to approve those services, which really makes regional availability a key factor in decision making. So there's lots to weigh up, and, you know, it's probably a weak answer or me sitting on the fence, but I think the outcome will be a mix of solutions in business aviation. You know, there's still plenty of room for GEO. We'll see many more installations of those kinds of solution on large jets. You'll see the multi-orbit solutions too that we talked about, air to ground where it's available and where it makes sense, and air to ground paired with LEO on some of the aircraft that fly domestically and internationally. You'll have LEO only solutions for some of the mid-size and small jets, especially outside of North America. And surprisingly, you'll probably also see L-band sticking around for some of those lower value aircraft where it just doesn't make financial sense to do an upgrade. So, you know, I think it's really interesting in business aviation because there really are just so many different choices around, and yeah, different solutions make sense for different airframes that operate in different parts of the world that are operated by, you know, different people.
Lucas, I'm disappointed in Craig's answer because I thought he was going to come off the fence. So instead he's sat firmly on there, and I'm now in a position where I have to come off the fence, I think. So from a commercial aviation standpoint, I just don't see air to ground having that same impact, certainly as it once did, you know, under GoGo in North America. And it's that single solution. It's just, I just think we've moved past that. And I'm conscious that we've seen a number of regional announcements of air to ground deployments, some really recent in Asia Pac, I know in Middle East again. So I don't want to, I guess, undervalue the, you know, the potential for air to ground. I just think it sits as more of a secondary solution, one that perhaps lends itself well to like sovereign interests. I think going forward, the future is certainly LEO in some way, shape or form. I think where we see the evolution is that openness to what Craig puts it, resilience and redundancy. I think we're seeing more openness to like secondary solutions on the fuselage, as opposed to it just being, you know, a horror in itself to have to drill one set of holes. I think we're seeing that increased awareness, I guess, of the benefits of having a secondary network that can provide that redundancy in case the first and the primary network might go down or might be weaker. And so I think around that, we'll see that maturity of the components that allow traffic to be routed based upon, you know, does it need to be low latency? Is it critical comms? And I'll go a little bit further to say that in the very far future, it could well be that we're looking at in-flight connectivity no longer through antennas being installed to fuselage. We could end up with this direct-to-cell trend really becoming something that catches on. And I'm not going to be drawn on any questions around that, but certainly it's an interesting space that could one day really change the dynamics of in-flight connectivity as we know it. So I think that's where I see the market evolving.
Yeah, I appreciate you jumping off the fence there, but let's dive into our final question for today. So what are the biggest challenges that airlines and business jet operators face when it comes to offering in-flight connectivity, and what advice would you offer to help them overcome these hurdles?
Okay, I think, again, there's probably touched upon this in some of the other answers that we've given, but there's probably two ways to look at this. I think the major challenge, if you look at the addressable market, which is, it's still huge. There's still a large number of aircraft, a large number of airlines that don't have in-flight Wi-Fi, and the majority of those are these low-cost carriers and regional carriers that are oh so important to the sector today. So convince their decision makers to adopt in-flight connectivity is probably the biggest challenge today, to get over that first hurdle, and for vendors to sort of help them do that. For them, the commercials around free to all as it stands just don't make sense under the current model of paying, per aircraft per month, and that being just a pure cost. It's just not something that I think many will be able to justify. So there needs to be a vendor, an offer, on the market, a model that sort of removes that or reduces that risk. We're not saying it's ever going to be completely removed as a cost or as a risk, but we want to see vendors come to the table, with almost like a turnkey style model that brings, brings advertising to the fold, in-flight entertainment, retail, all these things that could potentially help to generate a business case and offer some reward for the vendor as well by offering those services. I think we'd need to see that kind of model brought to the table. And I think we're seeing some positive steps in that direction, but for now, we're just not there as an industry. And I think that's where there needs to be a lot of work done around how do we convince those low-cost carriers to adopt. On those that already got connectivity, I just think they want to see the service become predictable, to become the things that it's often marketed as, where you've got a consistent quality of service, you've got consistent SLAs being met to the to higher thresholds than potentially what exists today. And I think we're getting there now. Like we're starting to see, really good speed test performance come through at that face level. But behind the scenes as well, we're starting to see a lot more predictability of things like hardware and just better all around service provided by the vendors as everyone starts to understand one another. So I think for me that still sits as a challenge, but one that's starting to resolve itself, which is great.
Yeah, I think for me, and it's pretty obvious, I think, from the previous answer that I gave, that there's just so many options in business aviation. And, to Dan's point about sitting on the fence, dual provisioning is really common in this market, where you have a primary and secondary system installed, and sometimes a third and fourth as well. So, when you're an operator, you've just got a plethora of options to choose from, and it can be really difficult to know where to start. And I think there's a general feeling of, the commercial aero market is a little bit more mature. High speed solutions have been around for a lot longer in that market, whereas it's really now starting to gain traction within business aviation. And on top of that, we've seen a huge amount of M&A activity in the last couple of years, both at the satellite operator level and among service providers, which has then expanded the range of multi-orbit, multi-band and multi-technology options available, and really compounded that confusion, I think, that exists. And the big issue that stems from all of that, I think, is the current lack of interoperability of hardware and services. And, once an operator makes a choice, they're pretty much locked into that, unless they're willing to spend large amounts of money on a rip and replace, which they may well be willing to do in business aviation, given the money on offer, I guess, or the ability to pay for services in that sector being that bit higher. Multi-orbit may help that to an extent, but what's really needed in the future is true network agnostic hardware. And I think the industry will move in that direction, starting with some of the antennas and then progressing to things like software-defined modems. So I guess the advice to operators that I'd have would be to just ask vendors about their product roadmaps and you know, how they're supporting interoperability in future, because the last thing you want is to be locked into a solution and have sort of no play with able, you know, ability to access different services.
Thank you, Daniel and Craig, for joining us today, and a big thank you to our listeners for tuning in. This was the Satellite World Briefing podcast. To stay up to date on all the latest episodes, you can subscribe to our channel and follow us on LinkedIn. From GEO to LEO, MEO to you, transmitting today's out-of-the-world satellite news. Tune in next time for more celestial stories.